I want to take your marker and place it there. Acts chapter 24. Acts 24. We'll come back and forward to this text throughout our study. Acts 24, where we begin and where we'll end it. We'll go to various places in the meantime. As you're turning there, I'll tell you of a story that I found that got my attention. Wanted to make sure it was true, so I researched it, and it's out there. You can find as much about it as you want to. There was an experiment that Stanford University conducted back in the 60s and 70s on four-year-olds. They called it the marshmallow experiment. And what they would do, they would take these four-year-olds, they would put them in a room by themselves, and the one that was conducting the experiment would put a marshmallow on the table right in front of them. And it would say, "Now, if you'll wait until I come back to eat this, I'll give you another one." And then they would leave the room. And so here's this four-year-old with a marshmallow in front of them, and what they were told was, if you'll wait, you can have another one. And then the guy would leave, and with some of the children, the doors barely slam before they eat it. With others, 5 or 6 seconds pass, and they eat it. And then there were some children that would cover their eyes so they couldn't see it. There were some that would put their head down on their desk so they couldn't see it. Some absolutely turned around in the seat so that they couldn't see it. And then what those scientists did, those researchers did, they followed those children throughout their school age years. They followed them for the next 20 years or so. And what they found out was incredible. I'm just going to read some of the results they found. The children that gave in early were most likely, as they grew older, they were the ones that would succumb to loneliness. They were easily frustrated. They generally grew up to be very stubborn individuals. They buckled under stress, and they shied away from challenges. Those that could hold on, those that could wait it out, were the opposite of that. As a matter of fact, it was kind of interesting. I want to get the number right. As those children grew older and began to take the standardized test, those that went on to college, the ones who waited for that second marshmallow, on average scored over 200 points higher on the SAT test to go into colleges. It's incredible. And they were making these conclusions that the ability to control yourself at a young age changed your life. It was a good foundation point on what kind of adult you would grow into. Are you with me in Acts chapter 24 again? A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Felix. Felix was that procurator of Judah that Paul is standing before on trial. And Paul began to preach to him. Do you remember Felix was what we would today call a rags to riches story? Do you remember that he was a slave? Felix had been a slave that one of the Caesars had gotten out of slavery and basically adopted him somewhat, and now he is a ruler. He is a counselor in Judea. That ought to be a story everybody would know. That's a bedtime story. But that's not what we think about when we think about Felix. We do not think about rags to riches. We think about an evil, evil ruler. We think of one who was corrupt. That's the only legacy we know about him. And Paul, even with his freedom on the line, he doesn't back down. He doesn't butter anything up. He doesn't sweet talk him. He tells him by inspiration, Spirit guiding him, obviously, but he tells him exactly what he needed to hear. In verse 25, he reasoned to an unrighteous man about righteousness. And he reasoned to an intemperate man about self-control. That's what we're going to study about this morning. Felix and self-control. How it applied to him and how it applied to us. Paul spoke boldly to him. Here's a man in a position of authority who thought he could do anything he wanted. And basically he did do whatever he wanted. And Paul speaks of righteousness to him. An unrighteous man. You remember what we learned about it? 172nd Psalm tells us that righteousness is defined by God's word. So that was point number one. Righteousness, God defines that, not us. It's not about self-righteousness. It's not about our own righteousness. It's about righteousness as God has described it. And then from there, we looked into Romans, how over and over through that book, there's a phrase, righteousness of faith. It's a righteousness described by God, and it's a righteousness of faith. And then we made some applications about it, how that righteousness is to be carried out in our life. Felix was not righteous, and Paul spoke to him about it. The old King James in verse 25 uses the word temperance. All the newer translations have changed that. Felix is not a man who controls himself. He would have eaten that marshmallow in about 0.3 seconds. He's not a man who is in control of himself. And Paul speaks to him about self-control. Felix needed it. And make no mistake, you and I need it. None of us can fully appreciate the beauty of the gospel until we get a good grip and a good recognition and acknowledgement of the perverseness of sin. There, all too often, we are not as in control of ourselves as we need to be. And God says a lot about that, and we're going to look at some of that this morning. Let's just real quickly define it. Self-control, I'm just going to read some things. Self-control defined as one who holds self in. Sometimes others control us. That's not what temperance is talking about. It's us controlling ourselves. It's us holding ourselves in. It's placing limits upon ourselves. It's holding our own appetites in check, our own passions in check. It's the ability to restrain. In the literal sense, I guess it's a form of discipline. We use the word self-discipline sometimes. Self-discipline and self-control, I don't know how you separate the two. They basically are connected. It's a life characterized by not fully and constantly just fulfilling every fleeting fleshly desire. And Felix doesn't have it. And many times in our life, me and you have not had it. And we're going to see what God tells us about it, and the necessity of it, the importance of it. Specific issues that we need to be mindful of, we need to control our words and our actions. And then secondly, we need to control our thoughts. Because that's where the words and actions come from. From the mind, that's where our actions are based. From the mind, our thought, our spirit, that's where our words originate. If we control our mind, we can control our actions. And that's what Felix is going to be hearing, and that's what we need to be hearing. Remind yourself about his corruption. He's a corrupt man. Look back into verse 24. We find out he has a wife named Drusilla. But remember, that's an adulterous marriage. This was Felix's third marriage. It tells us about his lack of control. He doesn't control his lust. He doesn't control his passions. History tells, and I don't know how you could document it, but in trusting the historians, apparently Drusilla was a very, very beautiful woman. Again, it kind of goes back to the self-control, doesn't it? She was easy to look at and very, very beautiful. And he's a corrupt man. He was a proconsul, remember. He curated funds from Judea and sent them to Rome. But he didn't always do that in ethical manners. He didn't always do it morally and even legally. In verse 26, here he is a judge. But what in verse 26 he was hoping for was that he would get money from Paul. He's looking for a bribe. He doesn't care about justice. He doesn't care about right or wrong. He doesn't care about the trumped up charges. He's worried about, is Paul going to pay me to let him go? Not a man with control. He's a man being controlled by his appetites. He's a man being controlled by his desires. And if he ever needed a lesson, it would be on self-control. But we need the same thing. Self-control is directly connected to righteousness. Me and you can't be righteous if we don't control ourselves. We cannot be righteous if our lust and passions and fleshly things have us by the throat. So this is our lesson. We're calling it Felix and self-control, but you put your name there. are you and I as in control of ourselves as we ought to be? Because the truth is, we ought to be. Look at Galatians chapter 5. Let's now bend this from Felix. We'll come back. But let's leave him and let's talk about ourselves. Galatians chapter 5. Let's remind ourselves of the significance that self-control should play in our life. The role it better play in our life. Galatians chapter 5. In Galatians 5. And remember, this was written to a group of Christians who were in the process of being led away. Galatians is written under the idea and the umbrella of Judaism. Judaistic teachers had come in and they're taking these Christians and they're trying to get them to renew themselves to certain aspects of the law of Moses. And Paul's trying to fix that and correct that and before it gets too out of hand for them. And in the midst of all that, he begins, I guess what we would call two separate lists. In verse 17, he begins talking about things they've got to put aside. And in verse 21, they are called works of the flesh. You remember them? Verse 19, these are the works of the flesh. They are manifest. They are obvious and clear. They are made known. What were they? Sexual immorality, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, enmities, strife, jealousies, wrath, factions, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings. And then he goes on to say anything in the neighborhood, anything like it, anything that resembles it, of which I tell you before, and I have told you in times past, this is not new information, it's the point. He said, you've heard this before. I'm not telling you something now that I forgot to tell you then. No, he had told them this in the first missionary journey. I've told you in the past. I'm telling you again. They that do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, we're going to come back to that list in just a moment. But look in verse 22. A list that we are no longer be entitled works of the flesh. Now there's a list that's going to be called the fruit of the Spirit. This has been set to music. It's probably in our songbook. I haven't checked, but I'm guessing that it would be. We sing about this stuff. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, meekness, self-control. Right there in the midst of all of these fruits that we're supposed to be exhibiting in our life. Not only before God, but before others. Self-control. Now go back to the list. Go back to the prior list. Works of the flesh. Sexual immorality. Adultery and fornication. That disappears if we have self-control, doesn't it? Uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, strife toward one another, divisions with one another, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings. You know what happens to the works of the flesh when you and I gain control of our passions? They basically disappear. Most of these, if not all of them, are directly related to our lack of control. The things that me and you have been guilty of, and we have been guilty of many of these, and the things we've been guilty of is because we were not in control of our passions at the time. We let the passions control us. That's how serious this is. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 1. Just go to another list that you and I can sing about. 2 Peter chapter 1, another list. This one not called the fruit of the Spirit that we're familiar with. This one we have entitled the Christian graces. It's memory verse, memory work. We ought to know these. Most of us will know them, can quote them. Second Peter, the umbrella that this was written was that it was an intense perversion that's going on within internally. How do you fix that? What is it that some things Peter would say to that? Let's start in verse 3. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, according to His divine power has given unto us all things that pertain to life and godliness. So everything that they needed, everything that we needed has been provided. All things pertaining to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him that has called us by His glory and virtue, and whereby are given unto us exceedingly great and precious promises. Those are incredible phrases. In verse 3, everything that pertains to life and godliness, we have not been left in the dark. Everything that's necessary for you and I to obtain salvation, we know. And then not only that, verse 4, but there are exceedingly great and precious promises. That would be an incredible statement if all it said was precious promises. That would be really, really nice if all it says was great, precious promises. Exceedingly great and precious promises. You can't even add any more to that. Everything that we need pertaining to life and godliness. There have been given unto us exceedingly great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that's in the world through lust. The world is full of it. And all too often, you and I have succumbed to it. We're trying to be better. We're trying to control that, right? Besides all this, for this very cause is the newer translation. So, all things that pertain to life and godliness, exceedingly great and precious promises that can aid us as we live in a lustful, evil world. For this very cause, verse 5. Add to your faith virtue. Add to your virtue knowledge. Add to your knowledge self-control. Add to your self-control perseverance, endurance. Add to your perseverance godliness, and to your godliness brotherly kindness, and to your brotherly kindness love. Galatians chapter 5 is a list that we know. The fruit of the Spirit, self-control, is right there. And it had been prefaced by a lot of sins. That if you and I have self-control over, those sins disappear. The Christian graces that you and I know and can quote and can sing about, prefaced by exceedingly great and precious promises that can aid us in this lustful, evil world. And so again, I'm asking the question, if we can add to our knowledge, self-control, how many sins are now off the table? How many sins no longer are a problem? They disappear out of our life. They disappear when restraint gets practiced. Not only that, let's add to that just a moment. If you and I can become temperate, if we can gain self-control and restraint, not only do a lot of sins disappear, but let's look at another avenue. And that is, a lack of self-control prevents us from reaching spiritual potential. We'll never be spiritually what we ought to be until we become people who can control those fleshly desires. Can you imagine an expensive car outside, a Lamborghini or someone, just an incredible elite level of performance car outside? Can you imagine that? Cars that by themselves can cost $250,000, if not more. And you look at that thing and you walk around it and then you start paying attention. There's not a steering wheel to be found. Here's an incredible, powerful, expensive piece of machinery, and it is useless. Useless because it's not controllable. How useless are we to the cause of Christ when fleshly things control us? We're not doing anything for Him. We're not doing anything on His behalf. We can't be what we're supposed to be if fleshly things control us. So what was Paul's answer to that? Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. It's interesting that Paul, talking to Felix about self-control. And I mentioned in our introduction that we're today trying to bend that toward us because we need self-control. But what we're about to see is, sometimes we use the phrase preaching to the choir. When Paul was preaching to Felix about self-control, he was listening to every word. He was listening to everything that he said because Paul understood his own needs to be controlled. Are you with me in 1 Corinthians chapter 9? 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 25. Every man that strives for victory in the games, he's talking about a physical athletic event. Every man that strives for mastery and victory in the games is in control in all things. He practices self-control in all things. Now, what does he mean? You understand that? We have all heard, and maybe even from our own experience have done it, we know what it means to be an athlete in training, right? Most of you that are athletic fans, you understand, and you're already aware that this coming summer will be the Olympic Games. Happen every 4 years. This summer is the Summer Olympics. There are people from countries all over this world, and those athletes are in training. That's what Paul is saying. When an athlete's in training, they control the amount of calories they eat. They control the diet that they're on, the nutrients that they're taking. And everyone that strives for mastery in the games is in control of all things. Why? Verse 25. They do it to obtain a corruptible crown. There are athletes in training right now, and they're doing it to get a gold medal. There are athletes in training right now. The baseball players down in Florida and in Arizona, they are in spring training. Why? Because they're trying to get a world championship. We know what it means. We get this just like the people in Paul's day got it. They're doing it for a corruptible crown, but we, verse 25, an incorruptible crown. He has changed gears on us. He says, you know how athletes do this so that they can get something, but it's going to fade. They didn't get gold medals back then. They got those wreaths that went on their head. And you know what happens to a wreath. You know what happens to greenery once it's cut off of the vine. They got that green ornamental thing around their head, and 6 months later it's brown and things have fallen off of it. Our athletes who are going to get those medals are going to go in safe deposit boxes. They're going to go in the bottom of a shoe drawer. They're doing it for something that ultimately will fade away. We, he says, are after something incorruptible, exceedingly great and precious promises. Verse 26, I therefore so run. I'm not after something incorruptible. I'm after that. And I am running after it, not as uncertainly, not as if I'm beating the air. I'm not shadow boxing. I'm engaged in a real fight. Verse 27, and I keep my body buffeted, and I bring it into subjection. Don't you think for a second. What's he trying to tell Felix? Control yourself. Don't let the earthly things control you. You know what he was saying to himself? I'm doing this every day, Paul says. Paul knows what he's speaking about. He's not just teaching Felix. He's teaching himself also. I buffet my body every day. I bring it into subjection. I don't let my body control me. I fight every day so that I can control it. Lest that by any means what I have preached to others, I myself become rejected. Paul says, I don't want to fall. I don't want to lose my faith. I don't want to lose my salvation. I don't want to lose out on exceedingly great and precious promises. I'm fighting every day to control myself. Can me and you say that? We have all been out of control in certain times. We've all let fleshly things control us at certain times. The question is, are we actively, daily fighting it? Go back to Acts 24. Let's see how this all ended up with Felix. We looked at it last week.
Let's remind ourselves. Acts chapter 24. He reasoned to him of righteousness. Felix is not righteous. He reasoned to him of self-control. Felix is not a man who practices self-control. Did you look at that last phrase? Felix trembled. When Paul got through, he was scared to death. I should say so. I hope me and you are a little scareder, if that's even a word. I hope we're a little more fearful now than when we walked in. When we think about the times all too often that we did not practice self-control. When we think about all the times we did not restrain ourselves. The times we did not bring our bodies into subjection, but yet the body controlled what we did. A lesson like this ought to make every one of us tremble. Felix better not be the only one trembling today. The problem is, he didn't act on that fear. He has a conscience that has been awoken. He has a conscience that's been pricked here, but he doesn't put it into action. So let me ask another question. Have we ever been guilty of that? Conscience is just laid right open. A passage is speaking to us, maybe even today. Have you ever, the phrase that we use a lot, got my toes stepped on. Have you ever said that or thought that or experienced that? And the problem is we never move our feet. We get our toes stepped on, but we don't change anything. It's as if we get this idea, if I'll acknowledge my toes were stepped on, I'm okay. If we're acknowledging that our toes are being stepped on, then that's an acknowledgement, my feet's in the wrong place. I got to make a change. His toes just got stepped on, but what's the problem? Go away for a time, he said, remember? When I've got a convenient season, I'll call for you. He's an unrighteous man who has heard about righteousness of God. And it scared him. He's a man who has no self-control at all. He does what he wants. And then he hears about consequences of that and it scares him. But he's not going to let his desire stop controlling him. He's got that beautiful wife. He's not giving that up. He's got power and authority and a judgment seat that we'll talk about soon. That third section, that third topic that Paul preached on, we'll talk about that. Oh, he's not willing to give any of that up. And so I guess the question for me and you is, what about us? Felix would have swallowed that marshmallow real quick. What would me and you have done? Get your songbooks out. Our entire life is a marshmallow experiment. Except it's not the marshmallow in front of us. It's beautiful people of the opposite sex. It's money. It's new cars. It's stuff to whatever applications we need to make on that. And all too often we'll grab him with both hands. And we're not looking ahead that there is something better. For those 4-year-olds who could wait, they got more. they waited and they were rewarded. There is a reward out there beyond anything exceedingly great and precious that we can't hardly imagine. Our life is that experiment. How are we handling it? And how much control are we exhibiting? Christ died because me and you, in times past, were not in control of our flesh. Thankfully, his death, he cleansed us of that. But we need to come to him and we need to take advantage of it. Do it while we stand and sing.